Hello, folks, and thank you for tuning in to the Moose Hunt Podcast, brought to you in part by OMM Outfitters and the Eagle Lake Sporting Camps of Eagle Lake, Maine. As always, I'm your host, Chris Richards, and on this episode, we're going to be sitting down with two gentlemen for two very different conversations. Both of these were recorded while we were in attendance at the 2024 State of Maine Sportsman's Show, hosted down in Augusta, Maine. The first conversation is with the Executive Director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, David Trahan. David has spent years advocating for the sporting traditions in this great state, as well as ensuring people's rights to keep and bear firearms are preserved year after year after year. He's going to share a bit of the history of Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, some key issues right now that he sees in the legislature, and also talk a little bit about his own hunting past. The second conversation is going to be with State of Maine State Senator Matt Pouillot. Now, some folks, if you're a consistent podcast listener, will remember that Matt was actually on our podcast back in June at the Moose Lottery Festival in 2023. Senator Pouillot was fortunate enough to actually pull a permit in the lottery and ultimately chose to come hunting with us at OMM Outfitters on his potentially once-in-a-lifetime trip. And he goes through the in-depth story of how that hunt went, the time he had with his father in the woods, and it's one that I'm sure people will want to listen into. So sit back, relax, enjoy, and welcome to the Moose Hunt Podcast. And today, our special guest, Mr. David Trahan, Executive Director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, is here at the Augusta, Maine, State of Maine Sportsman Show in Augusta. And our goal here is to learn a bit about Sam's background, what Sam does, and some history of the show, as well as maybe key pertinent issues of the day. I know there's a few that I'm certainly aware of. Some of our listeners may not know, but we'll kind of give the floor to David to kind of jump in on those topics.
Sure. Well, back, I guess it's 48 years now. We're coming up on our 50th birthday. There were some sportsmen sitting around after, I believe it was CBS News, did a hit piece on hunting, and These folks got together and said, hey, we need a voice in the political system.
Okay.
Given what they were seeing happening, there's this anti-hunting movement. Basically, they were describing hunting as a blood sport. They saw the first folks that were out there promoting gun control coming onto the scene and said, we better have a voice for sportsmen and women.
Okay.
And created SAM for the purposes of protecting hunting and firearm rights.
Okay.
And in that that group, my uncle's one of them that helped found SAM.
So you have a family legacy there.
Yes, we do. And
that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So let me just say something right up front, and that is that all I do is fill a spot in time. I'm the director, and I'm sort of the voice of that community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not David Trahan. It's not me. It's not my personality. I'm really the voice of sportsmen at the State House.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I take that responsibility very seriously. We, the organization, we have a facility here in Augusta. We have a conference center, seats around 70 to 90 people, depending on how you set it up. We do a lot of education work there. We have a formal lease with Inland Fisheries and Wildlife to use both our land and very soon our facility with the conference center. Teaches everything from trapping, hunting, you name it, in that facility. Within a driver and a nine iron of that building is a 130-acre outdoor education center with two kids fishing ponds.
Oh, wow.
Three miles of trails, a shooting range, beautiful facility, 7 years in the making. And
that's awesome.
Thousands of kids have gone through that facility.
Great.
And we're about to put in a dual archery range. We have an ATV oval for beginning training,
ATV riding.
Safety.
Yep.
Just we can pretty much do anything there. And when I started building it, I said to my board, the one goal that I have is no child will ever pay to come here.
Mm.
And so far, we've kept that promise.
That's fantastic.
That's amazing.
So,
wow. Here to that.
Yeah. Well, when I went by this morning, there were two little ones. And this one young man, he couldn't have been more than five or six.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his little tiny fishing pole. And him and his brother were walking down to go fishing. It was pretty good feeling.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's really what it's about right there.
So some of the things that Sam has done since it came on the scene is Article 1, Section 16 of the Constitution. That provision protects your right to own guns. And what it did was it solidified the fact that that's an individual right, not a right of the militia.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
and that was the Sam bill. Yeah. And most people don't know that.
Wow.
Yep. Sam also spearheaded the creation of the Land for Maine's Future program, Maine Outdoor Heritage Fund, Maine's Yellow Flag Law, Maine's Protection from Abuse Law, a whole series of pieces of legislation related to firearms, but also most of the conservation policy in the state of Maine is Sam initiated legislation. A little bit of a giggle there. Somebody shut the lights out.
Yeah, but the fireplace on the television kept going. Yeah, it was just like the generator going out of camp. Right?
So anyway, most of the conservation legislation in the state, Sam also initiated. Most recently, and folks don't even know it, we initiated the creation of the Land for Maine's Future Trust Fund.
Okay.
In the past, most of the conservation lands had been purchased with bonds, and that was a very messy system, the way that they were funding it. So we created this trust fund, can accept money from any source, and we seeded it with $40 million of general fund money.
Wow.
And that fund now is collecting interest, of which can go back into conserving land. Part of the compromise on that, some of the outdoor groups, maybe they don't care about hunting, agreed to start purchasing deer wintering areas to protect deer in northern, eastern, and western Maine.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great.
And we're a little over 10,000 acres now. A caribou stream deer yard up in Aroostook County is a purchase. Another one down east up in Rangeley area, one purchased there recently. So if it's big, Sam's usually involved in the policy.
Right. Yeah. So. Right. And I think what's a lot of people don't realize is, you know, the name Sportsman's Alliance of Maine is how many non hunting or fishing issues Sam ends up involved in.
225 to 250 a year we track.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. And we'll often either give testimony or work with the committee members, the governor. I know this is going to rile some feathers out there with people, but we have a great relationship with the governor. Whatever your politics are, when it comes to the hunting and fishing and gun rights issues, our governor, Governor Mills, has been very receptive to talking to us. And, you know, some people, it's a contentious political environment right now.
Yeah.
You know, on other issues, put your politics aside, because what just happened in the legislature, we need the governor. There were some gun bills that did pass. Waiting 72-hour waiting period bill.
So I've been following that one.
Yeah. And an example of how being respectful matters.
Yeah.
I was just talking with some folks who told me they'd sent a really nasty email to the governor. I said, you're asking the governor to do something for you and you're being nasty to her? Cut it out. That's not how you communicate with somebody. But anyway, the 72-hour waiting period, and another bill ended up on her desk that would destroy all firearms that are taken during a crime. Well, crimes can be outdoor game-related activity where a gun is taken. It could be grandpa's gun.
Yeah.
It could be a 17-year-old kid in the family who grabbed grandpa's gun, went out, did something stupid.
Right.
And they have an opportunity. The family has an opportunity to go to an auction to get that gun back. That's exactly what's happening today, this afternoon. There are 230 guns. Almost all of them are hunting guns that are out in one of the rooms here at the Civic Center. People are going to have an opportunity to come in and auction, get those guns back.
Right.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
You'll see during the auction, family members will come in and be saying to Junior, you worked all summer long to get enough money to get this gun back, and you're going to get it back. And the prices will – it's part of the penalty, really.
Yeah.
You'll have to pay 20-30% over the value of the gun to get it back. But it's also a lesson for the people that were involved that there's consequences. So there's a possibility now that the law passed to destroy those guns, chop them up and And that's unfortunate. That's just the gun control community's way of demonizing guns.
Do you?
And a symbolic way of, right, of destroying
them. Right. Do you feel that oftentimes, this is my perspective, is sometimes I worry about the contentiousness of the political realm right now is, and maybe I give people the benefit of the doubt too much. bills like that get submitted with an ignorance to the scenario you just said. Yeah. They think some horrible crime, mm-hmm, that we all would agree is an atrocity.
Right.
So they're thinking of that situation, that that's firearm, right, destroy it. And I think the emotion, yeah, if you pull one scenario out of society, I don't know that we would disagree with it. You know, mm-hmm, and I think an inability to communicate prevents that from coming to light.
Well, it's interesting that, it was less than 10 years ago, I was approached, public safety approached me and asked if we would consider supporting the destruction of guns used in murders. Mm-hmm. And we said yes. And we helped that law get passed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it, for the most egregious crimes,
right,
it had already been addressed.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But they did, they held this debate in the context of the Lewiston shooting.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when people are thinking that this is a way of destroying guns that are used in those types, mm-hmm, of crimes, mm-hmm, the people that are promoting gun control, they didn't bother to tell the fellow legislators and the public that. They just used it as a mechanism to get to what they want, a symbolic destruction of firearms because they're evil. That's the message they want to send. Mm-hmm. And like I said, most of the guns that are in this auction are hunting shotguns,
right,
rifles that you would use for hunting. And mm-hmm, right, it's unfortunate. We're getting caught up in the national debate on guns. Mm-hmm. The 72-hour waiting period, Maine's the second most rural state in the nation. That if you're going to purchase a firearm, sometimes you have to travel, depending, mm-hmm, on where you live, a great distance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And now you're going to have to do it twice.
Twice.
Yeah. I wonder how that helps the whole global warming issue, but that's a different subject. So to the point, though, is that this is about creating a barrier, mm-hmm, to people who want to go out and buy a firearm. In Maine, for whether it's recreational shooting or hunting, mm-hmm, you have guides across the state in very rural parts of the state. Many of these people making these decisions that have never been north of Bangor,
mm-hmm, yeah,
have no, yep, idea what North Maine Woods is. Mm-hmm. They don't know what it's like to travel 2 hours down a gravel road to get to camp,
mm-hmm, right?
Let alone another 3 hours to get to a place that you might want to buy a firearm. Kidry Trading Post is, what, 6.5, 7 hours? Mm-hmm. From some of those parts, mm-hmm, in northern,
yeah, America. How long would it take you to get to Kittery?
From 8 hours.
Right.
Yeah. So now you're going to have to do that trip twice to buy a firearm if you want to purchase a firearm, mm-hmm, at Kittery Training Post.
Right.
And that's what that is all about, is they tried to use suicide as the reason that they – reducing suicide. We've already addressed that. Maine's yellow flag law, of the 235 or so people affected by that, mostly in the last year and a half, nearly all of them are suicide-related situations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we passed that. There's other things you can do than telling 1.35 million people you got to wait 3 days to buy a firearm, mm-hmm, to address suicides. There's other ways of addressing it. So anyway, I was really disappointed in this session. Mm-hmm. It was defeated in the Senate. I was sitting in the Senate when it was defeated. There were two absent Democrat senators, and they pulled a maneuver using parliamentary procedure to neutralize two votes and get that to pass. So we'll be addressing that through our communications and with our membership. There are others, too, that I think Senator Hickman made a courageous speech in the Senate, a terrific legislator. So we'll be rewarding those that did the right thing and telling our members who didn't.
Right.
But I'm still in hopes that the governor will veto that bill. I've had half a dozen conversations with her, and she's from Farmington, Maine, mm-hmm, a rural part of the state, and I think she gets it.
Yeah.
So I'm optimistic that she may veto that bill.
Well, without communication, you can't get anything done.
Yep.
And I think I applaud your perspective on that, mm-hmm, and I think it's key. So those are really issues of the day. Switch gears a bit. This show, How long have you been coming to it? And what's the history of it? Anything you know about it?
Yeah.
Because it's something we look forward to every spring.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 42nd year that the show's been. My recollection of it was the Harry Van De Wy, George Smith years. George was like, it was like the president coming. He had a little entourage, and him and Harry would walk around the show. And I was just a kid, you know, and a bright eye, you know, big eyed. I loved to hunt and fish. I lived for it. So they were kind of like my icon as a kid and growing up. But I do remember that the show used to have a bear, a live bear, big bear, as big as this table, it seemed like when I was a kid, that you could come and see. And they had a big taxidermy display.
Yeah.
And people would wait in line to go see the taxidermy. Mm-hmm. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
There'd be a couple rooms set up, and you'd go in these big, massive boxes.
Yeah.
This while. And to a kid, that was just amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a coincidence that when you go in our conference center, the walls are lined with taxidermy.
Yeah. Right.
I know when kids come into that room, they're looking up at that 1,000-pound bull moose going, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And there's a full-size, you know, 400-pound bear, full mount in there, and people getting – but anyway, that all comes from my experiences when I'd come to the show, you know. I'd go outside. They used to have a fly fishing display out there. You could go out and watch people – flounder around with a fly rod. The show is it's deeply rooted in Maine.
Yeah.
It's been around a long time. When I took over, we made some changes. We brought in a fish pond. Another story behind that one. That was trouble. but we've tried to resurrect it. Try to have more of that hands-on stuff. This year we've got dual archery ranges upstairs, and I asked them this morning how that was going, and they said they were right out straight all day.
Great.
Awesome.
You could actually come in and try it out, and a lot of the younger kids were up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've got 120-some vendors, and outside, all the space outside's full. Show's doing really, really well.
Awesome.
Yeah. We did lose a couple of years with COVID.
Yeah.
But we've recovered from it.
Yeah. Great.
And the show, it's kind of like this passage from winter to spring when the shows come out.
Yeah.
Next weekend's the Presque Isle show. I always go up. I love that show.
Yeah. That's a good one.
We'll go up and attend that.
Yep. But
yeah, you see the people out here, and they've got kids in tow, and the kids, that just like me when I was little, like their eyes are this big, and, and they just can't wait to get in. And
so today, you got a big booth set up?
Yeah. We're hoping folks will come in and visit our booth. We've got a Grand Laker out front that I was taking tickets yesterday, and people were asking me, where do we get a ticket on the Grand Laker?
There's
just a certain nostalgia.
There is. I want one bad. I don't want to pay for one, but I want one.
My best friend, Roger Green, before he passed, he was a Master Maine guy. He had one up on Little Black Pond up in Fort Kent.
Yeah.
And I fished in that Grand Laker with him for 20 years.
Wow.
It is an elegant way to fish.
Mm-hmm.
They're comfortable. Mm-hmm. You can walk around in them. When you're in them, it's like going back in time.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody loves the Allagash, loves Northern Maine, it's those Grand Lakers. It's just a way of completing your experience.
Yeah.
So whoever gets that, it is used. I personally took it home, cleaned it up. Polyurethane the inside, went over it, put a drain plug in it, and put a cover on it. And anybody that's ever had one of those, you gotta keep water out of them. But they're just a wonderful way to travel on the water.
Mm-hmm. Those are
takes you back in time.
Yeah.
If it was me, I would name it, put a name. I come from an area with lobstermen. Every one of them has their boat name. I'd put a name on it. I'd put a little flag up in front of it, and I'd putter around the lake. Hoping people stop by, get a ticket on that.
Yeah.
We have 7 or 8 other raffles. But the most important thing is a membership.
Yep.
If you want to protect your future, you need to belong.
Yeah.
You need to be part of something where you can multiply your voices.
Absolutely.
SAM really, if you think about it, is a union.
Mm.
It's what we traditionally think of, a union.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we represent around 8,000 paying members and about 35,000 fishing game club members. So you've got 40,000 people that the voice can be heard. And that's what gives us our power.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't, what you run the risk of is out-of-state groups, their advantage over us is money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when this whole gun control debate started, Michael Bloomberg sent him a check for $250,000, said, go get the best lobbyists in Augusta and go do your thing. We can't do that. Mm-hmm. We can't compete with that. Mm-hmm. So what you have to have is voice. Yep. You have to have numbers. Yep. And we do have that. And if we have to, we'll flex our muscles. I've done a dozen or so referendums myself. I've led people's vetoes. I know what it takes. And we may have to exercise the people's veto going forward. Mm-hmm. And the legal system. If this out-of-state money, we need to send a message to Maine legislators who you represent. Is it the out-of-state money or is it Maine people? And I feel like we saw the beginnings of that out-of-state money influencing Maine legislators. Hmm. There are a lot of people seeking higher office, seeking positions of power and leadership that want that out-of-state money. That PAC money, what happens is that money flows in. It flows into leadership PACs. And whoever has the most powerful leadership pact is going to be in leadership.
Yeah.
We need to educate the public about that, what happens there, mm-hmm. and then how we counter that.
Yeah. I'm getting an education.
Oh, this is great information.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What it's about and why you should become a member. If you're on the fence of it.
Right.
Or if you want your voice to be heard, this is great. Yeah. And especially, I love what you guys are doing for the kids. I mean, this new center that you guys have made, I can't wait to get, I can't wait to get my girls over there.
Chris. I got to get mine over too. That.
Come on over. Give you a tour.
A 9 and 7 year old, and my 9 year old isn't quite as, interested, but my 7 year old, every fall when I guiding up north with these guys, she's angry as a pistol that she can't come. She does not comprehend. Dad, why can't I go moose hunting with you? I'm like, well, honey, I love that you want to go, but so you've been hunting and fishing your whole life. Mm. So
obsessed with it.
Any good moose hunting stories? Oh, have you had your own permit? I'd like you to share maybe your best one.
My favorite, that fellow Roger Green I told you.
Yeah.
He's like my second father.
Yeah.
He's just a wonderful man. We called him Santa. He had this big white beard.
Yeah.
He had a snowshoe shop. The first time I met him, I was logging on a woodlot next to his property, and there's a foot of snow on the ground, and it's snowing. I can barely see. And I see this guy coming through the woods with a dog, and the dog's struggling to get through the snow. And here he comes. He's on a pair of snowshoes, and I'm thinking, what in the world is this? I live on the coast. There's a lot of people from away, and logging is a little controversial. So I shut the machine off, and comes up, and he says, I need a little wood cutting on my property. Would you mind hauling me out some wood or maybe doing some cutting on my lot? And we were best of friends. That moment.
Immediately.
Yeah. So he ended up getting cancer and becoming quite sick. And he was obsessed with moose hunting. Mm-hmm. He would beg me to put in for it just so we could go on a hunt. And I got picked before he did. And I knew his health was declining. And I said, Roger, I'm going to let you shoot the moose.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And
good
he
for
did.
You.
And he did.
Good for you, David.
And we went out and he shot his moose.
Great.
And the second time, it was funny, but I would tell you, the cool part of this story, he had an X on the map where he thought that would be good moose hunting. And
yeah.
We'd been out a couple of days. We hadn't seen anything. And I opened up the gazetteer, and there was his X. And I said, let's go here, Roger. When we got there, the moose was standing out in the woods. He shot it.
Right.
I said, wow, we're in the world.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Isn't that?
So a few years later, I got picked a second time, and I offered him the same opportunity, but his health. He came on the hunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he wasn't able to do the shooting. But I think that illustrates, though, the kind of community that we're part of.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are good people. You have guides out here. You have veterans groups that commit their and they commit their resources, their personal time to taking people in the outdoors for a reason. It's those things that we experience in the outdoors with our family, with our friends.
Yep.
That make it special.
Yeah.
And that's the part I think that why we're so passionate in our community about protecting our culture, protecting our traditions. And then those people that don't understand that. when you talk about taking somebody's gun away, you might be taking away a third generation firearm mm-hmm. that great granddad had.
Right.
That he passed mm-hmm. through the family. Mm-hmm. And they demonize, you know, so it feels like a personal attack on who you are as a person.
Right.
Those, they don't go to camp and spend a week in camp with people that maybe they wouldn't socialize otherwise. I'm part of a camp in Lower Enchanted Stream that has six partners.
Yep.
Most of them can't hunt anymore. Their health is declining. Mm-hmm. So what do? We sit around. We eat good. We wait for a moose maybe to walk through the camp pond.
We play
cribbage. We have drinks and we tell stories.
That's it right there.
That is part of our culture, and that's worth protecting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so for those that are out there, when I told you need to belong to something, don't look at things in one issue. Mm-hmm. Well, Sam back 10 years ago did something I didn't like. Well, we participate in 230 to 250 bills a year. We're probably going to do something you don't like.
Eventually.
But mm-hmm. when you say, well, I'll never belong, whether you like it or not, we're big dogs on the political block, mm-hmm. and we can influence. If you want to influence, you got to belong. Mm-hmm. But why do you belong? Ask yourself that. It's to protect all of that entire life experience is what you're protecting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's what we've done a poor job articulating is that when you're part of an organization, or you're part of the Maine Professional Guides, when you're part of the trappers, you're protecting that piece of what I believe is heaven. For me, I can't imagine my life having grown up in the city and not had the experiences that I've had in the mm-hmm. outdoors.
Yeah, right.
Think about it.
Yeah.
All the friends that you've made, brothers that you fished and sisters that you fished with all your lives or hunted mm-hmm. with.
Yeah.
That I think is what you're protecting and what's important.
I think it can be, I heard this saying once, you can't complain about what's being served if you don't have a seat at the table.
Exactly.
And I think that I share that with message because with my involvement with MPGA is the same thing. People say, you know, back 10 years ago, MPGA didn't support. I'm like, be involved. Like we communicate as an association,
I really love what MPGA is doing. I went to your banquet a couple of weeks ago, and that was one of the most amazing banquets I've been to.
Oh, it was
awesome. We do a big one, too. We do 350, 375.
Yeah.
That place was packed, but I told your president the reason that I was so impressed was the amount of kids that were there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's been an effort.
And so much focus on young people. Mm-hmm. It was just a great time.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we need to get back to. We often get disrupted by referendums and political, and people get angry. But we are a big family, a mm-hmm. big community. Mm-hmm. The more we promote that type of environment, I think the better off we are.
So,
in the outdoors is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's right.
And make it fun.
Yeah.
Don't get too serious.
Yeah. You can't be too serious out there, right?
Well said, David. Well, we've reached the 30-minute mark.
That's all right.
Great. You're
that
awesome.
Went quick.
It did. Thank you so much for coming on, David. No, thank you for all you do, the mm-hmm. time, the energy, the passion you pour into, protecting and preserving the things you've talked about that mean so much to us and so many of our listeners. And I think it's good to share these stories because there's so many people who I don't know that they know what it takes to keep these things at times. Mm-hmm. And some years, you know, you have a great legislative session. It's like, oh, that was a dream. And then you have some where you're like, I don't know if we're going to get through this one.
I'll tell you what I believe is the key. And I think it's happening now is that like when all these gun bills were coming up, Maine gun owner, the NRA, SAM, Gun Owners of Maine, Women for Gun Rights, we sat down and said, we have to be together. Mm. We work together as a group. Same way with trappers, mm-hmm. guides, and others, SAM, mm-hmm. all of us. When we're challenged, we have to come together, mm-hmm. work together. Mm-hmm. You can take one voice, you can turn it into thousands.
Right.
And you can take thousands and turn them into tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
That's why those relationships over the long term are so important. Mm-hmm.
Well said.
Become a member.
Yes, become a member.
Become a member, for sure.
Please.
We're family members.
Well, thanks for having me
on. Yes, yeah. Thank you, David. Appreciate it so much.
Loved it.
And I'm sure you have a popular booth. And but we'll wrap up this session. We'll be back again with another guest here at the State of Maine Sportsman Show.
Stay tuned, folks, while we take a brief break for a word from our sponsors.
Eagle Lake Sporting Camps have been around since the 1890s. The camps sit on a 23,000-acre state reserve, surrounded by forest, loaded with wildlife. Cabins are rustic, bathroom, shower, full bar, great food.
If it has to do with outdoors, hiking, biking, camping, hunting, fishing, we can do it.
All I can say is, if you're looking to get away, Eagle Lake Sporting Camps has what you're looking for.
To learn more about the Eagle Lake Sporting Camps, please visit eaglelakesportingcamps.com. And now, let's get back to the podcast.
Hello, folks. We're back again from the State of Maine Sportsman Show in Augusta, Maine. It's me, Chris Richards, sitting down again, partners in hunting and crime, Nate Terrio, Ken Mayo, and we're joined by a repeat guest of the podcast, Maine State Senator Matt Pouliot, District 15.
That's right.
My Google search was was effective before. And folks may remember, if they've listened regularly, we had Matt on the podcast back in June of last year because he was selected in the lottery when it was hosted in Augusta.
Yeah.
In his district.
Pretty ironic. I swear to God, I did not plant my name.
You know, I have no doubt. And so Matt actually had an awesome moose hunt, came hunting with us at OMM up north, and had a blast. So obviously there was a lot of anticipation then, excitement, thinking other hunts, and you can listen back and it's kind of cool to have had someone been on here that talked about going and then the ability to share what actually happened. So kind of want to give the floor to Matt to give an update on life, that story, and however else you'd like to.
Yeah, for sure.
Life after the hunt.
Life after OMM. Hopefully that never happens. Yeah, I mean, I really did have a tremendous experience, but I do want to step back a moment to last year in Augusta. I mean, I think it was wonderful that the state of Maine made it a concerted effort to really bring the moose lottery to Maine's capital. A lot of times I think I grew up in Augusta, right? You know, along the banks of the Kennebec River where the moose lottery was hosted. And so to be able to go back and have it on that site really was great. But, you know, I've always been fond of Augusta because it's my hometown, right? Mm-hmm. But you hear a lot of negative things about Augusta, Disgusta, you know, what's going to go on? Is it safe down there? Yeah. All these kind of things. And I think it's cool that we could kind of for a moment step back and realize it is the capital for all Maine people.
Yeah.
It is the Maine's capital. It's where business gets done. You know, it's where we, you know, go to make laws that impact everybody's life, but it's also a community where people live. Mm-hmm. And it has going through it now a really quality river. I mean, I think the quality of the Kennebec's Class B now. The Iron Man did a competition there. It's been doing them the past 2 years, and the swimmers love that quality of river. And it's great for the anglers to get out there and have a rejuvenation of a fishery that people can be proud of and get kids out there. So having it in that location, I think, was really cool. And then, of course, you know, to win a bull tag doesn't hurt making any of us have a better day, right?
On site.
Right there.
I mean, and I was actually blown away. I had been there earlier that day. I'd actually read some names, participated in the podcast, talking about what was going on, and then I left. And I think I got a call from Nate or somebody like, oh, my God, you won. I'm like, you guys are pulling my leg. Get out of here. Can you imagine if I had actually read my name? Because they allow us to, you know, get up there and read some of the names. I think I read 100 names.
Right.
And mine wasn't on that list. Probably good. I might have got some tomatoes thrown at me from the audience. So that was cool. I mean, that's when I got drawn right in my hometown along the banks of the Kennebec River. And, you know, obviously, wasn't long before after that I heard from Nate, like, hey.
Get back to the podcast. Yeah.
When are we going to be booking a hunt?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So we did that. We booked a hunt with OMM, my dad and I. Actually, my dad was going to be going out of town for a long-standing trip, and he couldn't move it. And it was the time of my hunt in October Bull in a different zone. And Nathan was really good at facilitating a swap for us.
Yep, yep.
So that we could do the September Bull hunt up there in Zone 2. And, I mean, it was a hunt of a lifetime. Nice. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Now, what day did you get your moose?
The best day of my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Thursday, you know, and I was starting to wonder. I was like, geez, do these guys know what's up? But I knew that they knew. I knew that they know what's up. I mean, obviously, the record speaks for itself of success up there. I mean, I kind of think if someone comes out without getting one at OMM, that's probably because they weren't shooting straight or were not wanting to pull the trigger, maybe. but it's definitely not for lack of putting people in front of animals. I mean, they're all over it.
Yeah.
And our guide, Cody, was actually, I think it was his first full guided moose hunt that he had with us that particular way about going individually the way he had it set up. He had been working with OMM for a while, but he was able to go out and kind of do some of his own spots and incorporating the spot and stock style. I mean, I told him right out of the gate, I don't want to be driving around on woods roads, you know.
Yeah.
I want to get out and I want to hunt after that animal. And that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
Yep. We covered a lot of ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably walked like 50 miles, you know, but it was amazing because I really learned a lot about the tactics and the things that go into the hunt, which differentiate, I think, them in a lot of ways from others in their approach to going after and getting after moose, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I think it's, I mean, every hunt's different.
That's right. That's right.
And I think it's upon a guide or a good guide to facilitate those desires. Because we have a lot of people like, I want to go moose hunting.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like the experience or the methodology preferences when I talk to hunters now is even a more important thing than people talking about what an animal might be. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk, you know, asking hunters, what's your goals? Yeah. And they're like, oh, I want to have a blast. I want to be in the woods. I want to go out hunting. I want to hear vocalization.
Yeah.
And you don't even really get to, you know, what would an ideal animal be?
Yeah.
Cause they're really thinking about that. And, I saw the footage. So walk us through that morning, that hunt, how that went down. Kind of give us the details because it. We were at the sportsman show there in Orono, hosted at UMaine a couple weeks back, and Cody shared it.
Yeah,
and he goes, "You guys have to see this video."
Yeah,
and we played it on loop for a while at the sportsman
show. I'm glad that we got it on video because I don't think anyone would believe it otherwise. You know?
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, man, it was an incredible experience. The night before, we had been sitting overlooking this cutting, and the moose and cow were calling up on the hillside. Mm-hmm. And so that evening, Cody was like, look, you know, we're going to have to come back to this.
Yeah. No, you're good. You're good.
And we're going to have to come back to this spot tomorrow, but we're going to have to get up real early. And we headed in the morning early, and we sat early before shooting time, got everything ready inside the truck so that we could make sure when we got out we were going to be able to be super quiet. Mm-hmm. And Cody had told us, hey, we're going to get in a line. We're going to walk down this road. And we started calling, and we heard a response, but it wasn't where we thought it was going to be. We thought that
classic. Yeah, classic.
We thought that bull was still going to be up on that hillside because the night before he wanted to come out, and she called him back in. Uh-huh. I was like, "You ain't leaving, buddy. You're staying up here with me." You know,
yeah.
Don't forget who you're working for right now. So the next morning we thought, you know, with an aggressive call that we could get him to come down out, you know, in a response. Well, he did call back, but he was about 400 yards further down the road from that hillside the night before on the other side of the road, directly behind where we had been sitting on the road.
Really?
So wow. Like literally, it's almost like he was like, well, yeah, you know, there was something calling down there, you know, and came down at some point in the evening, crossed over and went into the other side of the road. So we continued calling, and we were getting a response from this bull. And we dropped down, and we actually had set up with shooting sticks, and we were on one knee because he was coming, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he just stopped. Mm. And Cody, our guide, was like, let's go. I'm like, looking at him like, dude, are you nuts? You want to get closer? Like, this is close enough. He's going to come out eventually, okay? And he's like, no, let's go. So we creep up the road, and I'm not kidding. We creep up literally to the exact spot where we had been sitting the night before. We were standing, and I know that's where we were because Cody had dropped his GPS out of his pocket, and it was laying on the ground.
And the, my God.
And he left that part out here.
He never told us that.
And the moose hoof print was like 3 inches away from it. So we're literally in the exact spot we were the night before, except now we've done a 180. The moose is in the woods behind where we would have been. And he's responding, and Cody's calling, and he's responding, and he's calling. But I'm telling you guys, you've seen it, obviously, in the North Main woods when the alders are so tight, you'd swear that you could shoot a cannonball into them, and it's not going to go anywhere.
It would stop, right?
Yeah. That's how thick these alders were. But we could see the tops of the trees just swaying around, and you hear this moose calling. But you can't see it. It's crazy to think you have this hundreds of pounds, maybe thousand for all we knew at that point, coming at you through the woods, and you can't see it, right? So the moose is snorting. He's rubbing the trees, rubbing through. And all of a sudden, my buddy, who's standing behind me, is videoing this whole thing. He was best man at my wedding. He's 6'5". So he's got like this perfect vantage point, right?
Above everyone.
It's like we have a drone behind us or something.
Jack's probably like, shoot him. You couldn't even see him yet.
And he's like, Gary, get your gun. To my dad, get your gun up, get your gun up.
Yeah.
Cody turns around and like just gives him this death glare. Like, shut your mouth, dude.
Quiet down.
Be quiet.
We had a laugh at that the first time we watched it. I have to say, we were joking about, tell me that someone's talking when they shouldn't be without actually telling me.
That's what it would look like.
The eyes.
Yeah, it reminded me of like a nun in middle school, you know, with a ruler just wanting to hit you on the hand or something. So anyway, we're standing there. We were like, we got to pull our guns up because by the time this thing is something that we can see, we're going to have to shoot because it's going to be like breathing on us.
Right.
Self-defense.
Yeah, at that point, exactly. So we're watching and the trees are crashing. The bull's just really making a racket. And he steps out. Now, if you listen to this video, you'd swear that we had like a double pull trigger or something on a gun.
Yeah.
It was like, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And it was my dad that shot before me. Now, my dad was my sub-permittee, but like, it was like, you know, like a nanosecond. We knew we were both going to be shooting, boom, boom, right there.
Almost simultaneous.
Yeah, it was almost like simultaneous. And I played it back to somebody. They're like, no way. You guys had to have been counting. Or someone said, shoot, shoot. No, we didn't. It was just boom, boom, double heart shot, 15 feet away.
Awesome. Literally 15 feet.
Yeah, that's not an exaggeration for the podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no. That
was... I mean, I think we had some blood splatter on our pants.
What's amazing is, and I've always found this fascinating in the moose woods, is how much noise they'll make before you see them.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear them and you
I'm
hear
like, how can I not see this animal? Right.
He's going to be here any second, any second. And then time keeps going by and they get louder and louder and louder.
If you watch from like the time that his head came out, we could see that and identify, okay, it's a bull and we're going to shoot. Is like, if you're watching the video, it's like three seconds.
Yeah.
You know, everything happens just so fast, you know? Yeah. But it was really all came together the way it was supposed to. I mean, God really blessed this hunt. I mean, to have this experience of my father is something that I'll never forget. And I'm sure he never will either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And when I was awesome. Thinking about, you know, you grow up in Maine, you're like, get a moose tag. Oh, I'm not going to get a guide. You know, I can shoot a moose. I'm telling you, man. There's nothing like having a good guide, you know, that can put you on to these animals in their turf, because it really, you know, to be that close to an animal on its own turf, I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
It's priceless.
Yeah, that picture of you and your dad is unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. It's so awesome. It's what it's all about.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Experience. Yeah,
yeah, and you had. So there was four of you there. Tom Hamilton was there too.
Yeah, Tommy was there. Yeah,
yeah.
That guy's amazing. Yeah, I think I know how to track deer through the woods now too. The Tommy Hamilton method.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I won't share it here in case it's some proprietary secret. But.
Yeah. I was going to make a joke, just be 2 inches tall. You can't miss a track.
I don't know. Don't say it. Tommy might be listening.
He's a great guy. Great guy.
Yeah. No. And you guys.
Oh, and I forgot to say, too, this was really cool. I didn't know this until after, but Cody, our guide, like I said, it was the first time individually going out. You wouldn't know it. I mean, the guy was a moose whisperer. He's been doing it his whole life. But his little boy, actually that day, his wife dressed his little boy up in a moose costume suit. And that was the day that we got the moose.
That's great.
Which I thought was really pretty cool. Yeah.
So we should tell her to put that on him
every time.
Not wait till Thursday.
It's all right. Build a little anticipation. Yeah. You don't want to make it seem like it's too easy.
Yeah. I actually, when you got that bull, Nate and I were having a conference in a different zone. You remember that? Mm-hmm. We were standing there talking, making a play. We'd done a morning hunt, and nothing had come together. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Senator Puya just got a moose.
Yeah. I remember. Pull down.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it was a blast, literally and figuratively.
Yeah. Yep.
Still got a freezer full.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you, that moose meat, it lasts and lasts. It's like an Energizer bunny. It just keeps going and going.
Yep.
Yeah, but I was looking at it. I'm like, all right, summer sausage. Well, summer's coming up. I guess I can start eating that.
There you go. That's awesome. Great
Absolutely.
Deal.
No, it was.
Oh, I wasn't supposed to wait till summer to eat it.
Okay. We're going to have a winter sausage.
Yeah, we need a winter sausage. Yeah. A fall sausage.
We'll get that at the butcher shop.
Yeah, that's a new product line at the butcher shop.
What are you looking forward to this upcoming year, Nate? I'm curious.
Oh, we got quite a few hit list bulls we're excited about. We're getting ready to embark on our shed season next couple weeks here. So heading back home today and getting ready for that. And I'm excited to get home. Been gone for about 3 weeks. So get back to shed season and just getting out there, you know. Winter's over. It wasn't much of a winter. Happy for the moose. It was kind of a little bit depressing for the snowmobile junkies out there.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Actually, we missed a trip.
Yeah.
Matt,
yeah,
you come
up
every
year.
Yeah,
I was supposed to come up for a snowmobile trip, but mm-hmm. snow was too thin.
Yeah, decided had a different plan. But, yeah, really excited to get back out there. And, you know, every year for us, the anticipation. Moose Draw is coming up. It's going to be in Fort Kent this year. So that's our backyard. You know, we're really excited about that. And you know, get another big year lined up. And just fun, you know, Kenny and I, this whole thing kind of started, you know, we're best friends and, you know, he moved down to Bangor and what always brought us back was moose season. So kind of the way it is with all of us, everyone's busy and running lots of directions and just look forward to getting back together, camaraderie and hanging out with our friends and clients. And it's an exciting time of year for us. So
it's cool. It was fun to watch you on your turf during moose season. I mean, Nate and I have been friends for a while now. And I always said, you know, if I ever get a chance to do a moose hunt in Maine, I want to do it with you guys. And it was a blessing to be able to do that and have everything line up that we could, you know, even just getting a swap and stuff. They're just professional at getting things lined up. And it was amazing. But, man, I'm telling you, you're like – it's like a robo cop up there. Like, this is the way it's going to be. And it's all lined up perfect. And there's no nonsense. I'm like, he's not here to hang out this week.
I told you that, though.
Oh, I knew that. That was cool.
And I appreciate
that. You know, when somebody has that much passion that you all have for what you do up there, it shows. And that's what you got to do. You got to be focused. And it was fun to watch.
I think it's increasingly complex when you have three camps, processing facility, on and on and on.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. We're there, and I forgot that it is the hub of the processing facility too. Which everyone's coming in from all over the place with all these moose to drop them off.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's a little hub,
and it's
And it, that can become like a social place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
so it you, does. You know, you get folks hanging out, and which it's all good, but there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And things run so smooth. But when you have that many hunts or you have that many people and that much going on, there's always going to be some
can't avoid it.
Professional yeah. development opportunity, as yeah. I recall it, or, you know, a thing to work through. And so it's that's why I think it's fun with the team, because it's one of those things where something will fall through.
Yes. Yep.
And we're fortunate that we have the team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And kind of the culture of people where I don't go up guiding in Eagle Lake and with OMM to guide my hunter.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. It's a whole team aspect.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, I'm going moose hunting for the week. Mm-hmm. You know, I always tell my wife when I leave, I'm like, don't have any illusions of me being home early, right? Even yeah. if my hunter shoots a moose in 20 minutes on Monday,
right?
Which did happen in October.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, I'm like, don't for 2 seconds, unless every hunter
yeah, yeah, unless in, it, yeah,
is we're all done. I mean, if everyone buttoned up Tuesday, we might do that, you know, but, yeah. Yeah. but it's kind of this
team. I felt that way. I was like, wow, you're not, you don't have just one guide. You have your one primary person that you're with.
Yeah.
But there's like Tommy jumped in on our hunt, you know, to help out.
Right.
And I think that if had the week gone on and more people been available, we'd have more people out there, but we didn't need it. We got a moose.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So yep. it's not like, oh, you know, with one person and you're like, man, this dude, like, I don't know if he's really, but he's my ride or die, you know, with you guys, it's like a whole right. army.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And that's kind of the fun is the end of the week, mm-hmm. you know, we're able to do that. Just that's kind of a culture that Kenny and Nate built, and expectations of those is we're going moose hunting for the week. And, yeah. and you have guides who really a major part of why they're doing this is because they love to do it and they enjoy it, mm-hmm. you know? So the idea of going and hunting for 2 hours mm-hmm. and that being your year is like, no,
yeah.
you know, we want to
keep it going,
stay and do something,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
do
yeah.
something. So, I really appreciate that
yeah.
about being up there.
Yep.
For yeah. sure.
It's a blast.
Cool. Sure.
And so I remember I delivered you some of your moose meat actually.
Yeah. Yeah. We met at the,
Burger King yeah, in Newport.
yeah.
yeah. Nice.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Good it was deal. in the cooler in the boat.
In I the think. Boat.
Yeah.
yep.
Yeah. Yep. The guide mm-hmm. combinations, but no, man, congrats.
Thanks. Yeah. It was definitely a wonderful trip. And, you know, I look forward to this sportsman show every year because mm-hmm. it's such a huge part of our economy in the state. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I worked in the legislature for a long time trying to, you know, make sure that we have more access to outdoor heritage for future generations. It's so important. And,
yeah.
and you guys are a big part of that, just, you know, building the awareness and having this podcast and getting the word out about the tradition. It's really important.
No, we appreciate that. And it is, I love these sportsman shows because it's such a celebration and you do see all these entities that come together that you
yeah.
might not think of at any given yeah. time. You see sporting camps and guides and Sportsman's Alliance of Maine and politicians, frankly,
yeah,
you know, here and how much it really takes to make that wheel go round
yeah.
and ensure that there's a wheel.
Yeah. To go around.
yeah.
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously managing the population is a huge part of that and having this sustainable harvest mm-hmm. and this approach to hunting our animals here. It's a blessing that we can do it, but we got to do it the right way so other people can do it down the road too.
Yeah. 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 No, absolutely. Absolutely.
And well, it's good being on here with you guys.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Appreciate
man.
It, buddy.
Yeah.
Always fun. And, yeah, you don't have to count on any competition from me out in the woods.
I'm out, got a little sit
I'm
out.
Out of the mix, yeah, so I've got to sit out for
You're
a few
take
years.
You're going to take a little sabbatical.
I'm going to tune myself out, but it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm hopping off too, buddy. It's good chatting with you guys. Yeah,
good
yeah.
to see you back on here for the recap. Of
yeah. The recap.
Some great recap. Up. Moose yes. hunt, and I won't tell Heather that was the best day of your life.
Yeah.
awesome. Because I know better.
Thanks, buddy.
And I right. know what the best day is like. And you got another really good
yeah,
day.
Yeah, a little baby. That baby boy coming up in August.
There we go. Congrats to that, man.
That's yeah. so huge for us. We're excited. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks nice for having me on.
Awesome. Right. Thanks so much, guys.
You got to see it.
Stay tuned, folks, while we take a brief break for a word from our sponsors.
If you're looking for a world-class destination to go after big game or small game, look no further than OMM Outfitters. I'm Nathan Terrio with OMM Outfitters, and we encourage you to take a look at what we have to offer. Please visit our website at www.ommoutfitters.com and see what our professional staff has to offer and how we can create memories of a lifetime.
And now, let's get back to the podcast. And that concludes this episode of the Moose on Podcast. To all our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. Be well, be safe, and as always, God bless.